The development of human civilization is recorded for us in Genesis chapters 1 to 11. These people who lived so long ago were neither simple nor were they primitive. Even before the flood, in Genesis 4 and verses 20 to 22, we see the names of people who were experts in certain skills, experts in farming, experts in making musical instruments, experts in metalwork, smelting with brass and iron. People did not evolve to these skills. They were capable of them from the beginning. Because people were always intelligent in the whole of history, in the past. The flood came, and of the eight people, of all the people, only eight got out of the ark. And Genesis chapter 10, the previous chapter, gives us the genealogy of Shem, Ham, and Japheth, Noah's three sons. We are all descended from Shem, Ham, or Japheth. In fact, most of us that live in Northern Ireland or in the Western world are descended from Japheth according to chapter 10 and verses 2 to 5, because that's who the Gentiles came from. Now, by the time you get to Genesis chapter 10 and verse 25, you read of a man called Peleg, one of the descendants of Shem, Peleg. And it says in that verse, Genesis 10:25, that in his days was the earth divided. And then it tells us who his brother was. In his days was the earth divided. In other words, in Peleg's day, there was a division of people into different nations. Now, in Genesis chapter 11 that we've read, the Babel account, that is the detailed explanation of the division that happened in Peleg's day. Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 to 9, is a microscope put upon Genesis 10:25. It emphasizes this division. God, as it were, gives us the full genealogy in chapter 10, all the descendants. And then he goes back and he says, now let me tell you some more about this division that happened in Peleg's day. The origin of the nations. How this all came about. Where did all these languages come from? Where did all these nations and people groups come from? Well, the answer is Genesis chapter 11, verses 1 to 9. Because here initially we see the origin of civilization. And at the origin of civilization here, this particular type of civilization, which we'll call a city culture, there was a kind of unity. But the unity came from the fact that at this point in history, all people spoke only one language. We speak today of the language barrier. If I go to Germany or to the Philippines, there's a bit of a language barrier. If a German says to me, what time is it? I wouldn't know that he's even asking what time is it. We call it the language barrier. Way back then, there was no language barrier. And the whole population moved to the east, the Bible tells us, to the plain of Shinar. That's verse 2 of Genesis chapter 11. The whole Babylonian basin, what they call Mesopotamia. They, the people, traveled to the east, to this area. And even today, according to a man called Leopold, that is one of the Genesis commentators, he says, Mesopotamia is yet an extremely fertile land, very profitable. Imagine what it would have been like back then. Now, some people, when you start to study Genesis, especially in our day with modern scholars, people like to speculate, how many people would there have been so soon after the flood? Well, how soon after the flood was it? Well, the modern critics who like to always compact things and say it was a lot shorter than what it was, they say this after Peleg was born, Babel happened 100 years after that, 100 years. Whereas if you look through the genealogies themselves, Jewish chronology and so on, it's more accurately measured that from Peleg's day to the Tower of Babel is 300 years. Okay? Now, even if it was only 100 years, in those days, the average amount of children in a family was 8. That was the average. So when you work out the mathematics, which I didn't do, but I read it in the book that's of someone else that did, even if it was only 100 years between Peleg's day and the Tower of Babel, there would have been at least 30,000 people. But if it was 300 years, it would have been over 200,000 people. So there's no problem either way. There were plenty of people to build this city of Babel. But I want to notice tonight with you, as we begin to study this before we get into more next time, a few things about this civilization. The first thing I want to tell you is this. It was a disobedient civilization. God commanded in chapter 9 and verse 1 after the flood to go out and replenish the earth. And in the Hebrew words, it emphasizes the spreading out, as Martin Lloyd-Jones says, and the replenishing of the whole earth. There was to be a spreading out to repopulate the earth. Now, you don't do that staying in one valley, all huddled together. But people's hearts were still sinful after the flood. And they were led by a man called Nimrod. You've heard of Nimrod, chapter 10. Look at verses 8 to 10. And Cush begat Nimrod. He began to be a mighty one in the earth. He was a mighty hunter before the Lord. Wherefore it is said, even as Nimrod, the mighty hunter before the Lord. And the beginning of this kingdom was Babel, and Erech, and Akkad, and Calne, in the land of Shinar. A mighty hunter, that word means a mighty tyrant. Nimrod was a mighty tyrant before God. And in Nimrod's day, he was their leader. They built the city of Babel. Babel means the gate of God. In Hebrew, it means confusion. Under Nimrod's leadership, the people did not want to spread out and repopulate the earth. They wanted to stay together in one big city. And they wanted to build this city. Why did they want to build it? It tells us, doesn't it? Verse 4 of chapter 11. They wanted to build a city lest we be scattered abroad. In case we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. They didn't want to be spread out over the earth. They didn't want to be scattered. The exact opposite of what God commanded. Spread out and repopulate? No, lest we be scattered, we're going to build a city and stay together. Leopold says, even their words breathe defiance against God. End of quote. Matthew Henry, the Puritan, draws attention to this as well. This fact that building this city, building of cities before and after the flood, cities were, the two cities that were built, one before and one after, were both built by men of bad reputation. Cain, the murderer. Nimrod, the tyrant. Matthew Henry says, cities were first built by those who were rebels against God and revolters from God. End of quote. Interesting, isn't it? And very true. So Babel was initially built in direct contradiction to God's command. That's why, firstly, I say it was a disobedient civilization. Secondly, let us also note, it was an ingenious civilization. Note, in the words of Martin Lloyd-Jones, the ingenuity of man in verses 2 and 3. It came to pass as they journeyed from the east that they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there. And they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone, and slime had they for mortar. In Canaan, there were lots of stones. So what were the houses built out of? Stones. In the land, on the plain of Shinar, there are very few stones. However, man is ingenious. God made him that way. What did they do? Well, they said, let us make bricks. How did they make bricks? How did they know how to make bricks? They knew how to make bricks via the scientific method, which historians say only came into existence in the 16, 17, and 1800s. Load of nonsense. They made bricks via the scientific method. What's the scientific method? Observation. Theory, thinking, and then the practical testing of your theory. That is the scientific method. Observation. Observe the ingenuity of man. He observed. He saw. The people saw that when the sun shines on clay that has been made wet, and the sun shines on it day after day, it bakes the clay. And after a long time, if it doesn't rain for a long time, the clay that is baked by the sun will become as hard almost as stone. They observed this. And then they didn't leave it at that. They observed that, and then they thought, there is a process of nature. That's what happens. But they now think, which is where the theory comes into it. They think, let us take that process. Can we do anything to speed that up? Yes, we'll build an oven, a kiln, and fire, and we'll get the wet clay and we'll cut it into the sizes we want, and we'll burn it and heat it quickly. Rather than the sun heating it over months and months and months, we'll heat it quickly and see if this process works, can be speeded up. And that's what they did. They made an oven, they speeded up the hardening process, and they burned the clay in the oven, and they made their own bricks. They make bricks similarly today. Not the concrete ones, but the red brick. Mortar. What did they have for mortar? It says in the King James Bible, slime. When you look at the Hebrew word, it means bitumen. Like tar, a derivative of tar. Much bitumen is found near the surface of the ground in the Middle East, in the region of Mesopotamia. So they had brick buildings, and they had bitumen for mortar. Archaeology confirms this, of course, because what the Bible says is true. The houses in Canaan are built of stone. The ancient houses that they dig up in Mesopotamia are buildings made with bricks out of clay with tar for mortar. The ingenuity of man. It not only was a disobedient civilization, it was an ingenious civilization. That's what they did, made bricks. Put mortar between. You know what? Monkeys don't do that. Sure they don't. You ever seen a monkey building a brick? putting slime between it and building houses? Not at all. Monkeys don't do that. No matter what Richard Dawkins says. Richard Dawkins is an illogical man whose science is not science. His science is pure speculation and mythology because he does not observe and he does not think and he does not test his theories in reality. It is historical theorizing. The man is not even sensible. Lots of his arguments are spurious. Maybe I told you the other week, he made a quote not so long ago, and it was on the internet, and his quote was this: someone as intelligent as Jesus would have been an atheist. That's what he said. Someone as intelligent as Jesus would have been an atheist. Is that right? It's easy to prove that fallacy. David Berlinsky is the top quantum physicist in the world today. He's a very intelligent man. What about Thomas Aquinas, the great philosopher, Roman Catholic philosopher from the Dark Ages? Or take any of the great men of church history. What his name has went from me now. Blaise Pascal, probably another one. Are those men intelligent? Is David Berlinsky intelligent, the scientist today? Of course he is. He's not an atheist. None of those men are atheists. You can't make the connection between intelligence and atheism. It doesn't exist. Point proved. You either have to say David Berlinsky and Thomas Aquinas were not intelligent, or else you have to admit intelligent doesn't mean you become an atheist. There's no connection at all. So Richard Dawkins' arguments are nonsense. They're logically invalid. They don't work. The ingenuity of man. All this comes from monkeys don't make bricks and cities. Okay. Thirdly, this civilization had a purpose. And what is the purpose of the civilization? Two things: prosperity and pleasure. The city civilization, the purpose of it always is prosperity and pleasure. Why did they want to build a city and not spread out? As Martin Lloyd-Jones says, for the same reasons that any society today wants to stay together. It's always the same. Ease and safety. There comes the idea of safety in numbers. For the purpose of trade, safety and pleasure. Trade. Trade is much easier if the person you're trading with is nearby, especially in days when there's no ships and lorries and emails and aeroplanes. Ease of trade, city civilization. Safety. Safety in numbers. From enemies, marauders, animals. And this would have been very important. We'll build a city, says Martin Lloyd-Jones. We'll put up a wall, we'll put up this tower, and we'll be safe inside. Safety in numbers. It's quite a valid point, actually, because in the days just following the flood, when all the animals got off the ark, there were still dinosaurs running around. They hadn't all died out, of course. They got off the ark too. Remember that? And pre-flood, they were not allowed to eat meat. They had no desire to eat meat. But post-flood, they were allowed to eat meat. They had the desire to eat meat. Isn't it a strange fact that in the area of Babylon and Assyria, the whole area of Mesopotamia, look at the architecture. Go to the London History Museum, the History Museum, National History Museum in London. Look at the architecture they have brought back from Nineveh and the different cities of this region. Their architecture is full of carvings of dragons, large lizards, reptiles that look very like dinosaurs. That's simply because dinosaurs were around after the flood for a while. Safety in numbers. They built a city. They wanted safety from all kinds of attacks. Pleasure and entertainment, that's another reason why people build cities. Pleasure and entertainment is much easier in a city, isn't it? You don't have to travel miles from the outlying farms. No, in the city, it's all laid on. It's organized for you. Civilization has always built cities for this reason. And if you want to know more about it, I suggest you read some of the history books that Martin Lloyd-Jones recommends on this, and you will find motives for civilization, this city culture, are clear enough. People unite for trade, safety, and pleasure. Three main things. And that's the reason these people built the city of Babel. Disobedient civilization, ingenious civilization, the purpose of it was prosperity and pleasure. Fourthly, the problem with this civilization. You see, it says in verses 1 to 4, the whole earth was in one language and one speech, and it came to pass as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there, and they said one to another, go to, let us make brick and burn them thoroughly. And they had brick to stone and slime for mortar. And they said, go to, let us build us a city with a tower, whose top may reach unto heaven, and let us make us a name, lest we be scattered upon the face of the whole earth. The problem with cities, or the city of Babel in particular, is this. They tend towards a number of things. Babel tended towards godlessness. Godlessness. You note the verses I've read. You can read the whole 11 verses. I ask you a question. Until you go down to where God looks down from heaven, the plan of all the people here, where is God mentioned in their speech? Not at all. Where in the verses do the people ever consider God? Such a short time after the flood, the answer is not at all. What we have here is humanism. They have made their plans. This is what they're going to do. And they've left God completely out. Let us, verse 3. Let us, verse 4. Lest we be scattered abroad. What we have here is self-sufficient man. We're going to do this and we're going to do that. Self-sufficiency. Humanism is not modern. It's very old. We're going to do this and we're going to do that. We're going to make these decisions. We're going to make these plans. We're going to build a city. We're going to build a tower. We don't want to be scattered. And they leave God completely out of their plans. They don't even mention him. Humanity and a human life planned out without God. There's one word for that. It is humanism. Confidence in man. Faith in man. Man's going to fix everything through his education. You should have heard them at the end of the 1800s and the beginning of the 1900s. Man, through education, was going to ban war. There's going to be peace. From then on, all we needed was education. Man was going to sort everything out. And then they had the two worst wars in the whole of history. And in the one century, they wiped out more humans in one century than they had in all the previous centuries added together. Humanism. Self-sufficient man, society without God, plans that are made, leaving God out. That's what we have here at Babel. Sounds very like the British government, doesn't it? Humanism. Once fearful man huddles together in his city culture, civilization, what happens? Well, he begins to think he's self-sufficient. He begins to think he's in control of his environment. He's the master of his environment. He's in control. That's not hard to be master of your environment if it's in between four little walls. Sure it isn't. Everything's provided, delivered to your door. No need to even think where it comes from. Caught up in the buzz of society. This all is in cities, isn't it? This is Babel. That's why God wanted them to spread out and repopulate the earth, because it's much harder to think, I'm self-sufficient and I don't need anybody else and I'm an autonomous human. It's much harder to think that when you're out there digging with a spade in the field and planting the seeds in the ground that you have dug with blood, sweat and tears. And you know that if it's not the right temperature, if there's not enough rain at the right time, if there's not enough heat, you won't be eating anything. And you're not self-sufficient. When you're outside the city mentality, you see very plainly your dependence upon other forces. We are not self-sufficient, but dependent. And we're more inclined, therefore, to pray to God for blessing and help. That's one of the problems with this society, the Babel society. It leads to godless self-sufficiency. The second problem with it was this. It makes life more frantic, doesn't it? Rushing here and rushing there. Rushing to work, rushing home, rushing to the entertainment. It's all hands on. It's so hard to find time with the Babel mentality for God and for prayer and for attending church or going to any meeting. So busy, everyone's so busy. Babel city life tends towards frantic activity. Always running late. Where do people always run late in the city? They're always running late. Running behind schedule. Rush, 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 rush. Life is such a rush. You see the jam tube trains in London with people standing like this, carriage after carriage, morning and night, rush hour. No one speaking to one another. The traffic jams on the motorways, gridlocked for mile upon mile. Do you really think that's life the way God intended? All this rush and hectic. Picture that, picture alongside that, the village or the farms, the homestead. Country life, as country life used to be, before the city mentality came into it, into the country now, and they're all rushing around the roads, the same, the city mentality. But picture country life, village life the way it used to be. Time for one another. Hello, how you doing? Looking over the gate, looking at the sunset, talking to your neighbours. Where's there more hurrying around and frantic activity? In the city? Or in the village. There's a bit more of a relaxed pace. People are more friendly because they're not under the same pressure. It's the problems with this Babel society. That's why God didn't want it made. It tends towards godlessness. It leads to frantic activity. But even worse than all that, it tends towards sin and corruption. Listen to this quote from this man. This man's name is Dr. John Nichols. You've probably heard of him, though you may not have. Dr. John Nichols was the assistant and then the secretary of the London City Mission. He was the assistant when I was there, and then he became in charge of the London City Mission for many, many years. He's a doctor in theology. So he knows about cities. And he wrote this in the London City Mission Winter Magazine of 2006. He says, quote, "In the modern era, large cities are the cause of the corrupting influence that inundates our world." You get that? In the modern era, large cities are the cause of the corrupting influence that inundates our world. End of quote. That's why God didn't want them building Babel. Because the human heart is sinful. The flood didn't eradicate that. And the more sinners you put together in close proximity, the more sin they'll get up to. They'll encourage one another in it. Let me ask you this. Which life tends towards the more gross sin and depravity and perversion? Village life? Life on the farm? Or city life? A million sinners, or more than that, all living together in close proximity. By comparison, do more murders happen in the country or in the cities? In the village or the cities? Where do rapes occur? In the quiet villages or in the cities? By comparison, where do gay clubs spring up? Do they spring up in Hillsborough Village? No, they spring up in the cities. Not in the quiet country villages. Why is that? The answer is obvious. It's not because village people are less sinful or people that live in the country are less sinful. No, nothing to do with that. It's simply because in the city there are more sinners all together coaxing one another on. The big cities of this world are the wickedest places on earth. There's no doubt about that. Because there are more wicked people all together. So we see from Genesis 10 and 11, and I've just really introduced it tonight. We'll get to it next time proper. These people who built Babel started a city culture, this type of civilization. It was, number one, a disobedient civilization. Number two, it was an ingenious civilization. Number three, the purpose of it was pleasure and profit. And four, there was problems with this type of civilization. It tends towards godlessness, it tends towards frantic activity, and it tends towards sin and corruption. I conclude. These people that we read off in chapter 11 were disobedient to God. They were ingenious, yes, but the whole purpose of their culture was to make life easier for themselves and not obey God. And they made these great plans to build the tower without a single reference to the God that made them. They thought they could leave God out of their civilization completely. They thought they could just do what they wanted. They wanted life without God's commandments. They were humanists. But they didn't get away with it. No, no. Next time I'm here, we'll see that. They didn't get away with it. God came down to see. Babel is the third incident of judgment in the Old Testament, and it is a judgment on humanism. What's the problem in the United Kingdom today? The main problem, it can be summed up in the word humanism. Life without reference to God. God never lets that off. What about you, brethren? What about you on the internet? Listen. You have your life all planned out. You have your plans laid. Your career. Where you're going on holiday. Your friends. Where you're going to have your house. Where you're going to live. What car you're going to have. You've planned out your living standard. Life can be all planned out. There's nothing wrong with planning life out, but I'm asking you this. Is God in your plan? Have you planned a hectic life without God? If so, you're a humanist and a fool. Or are your plans under God? With God or without Him? Is your purpose to obey God or to just do what you want? If you leave God outside your plan for your life, you will pay the price. But I would say to you, make God, Jehovah, your anchor in life. Let His word be a lamp to your feet, a light to your path, and you'll have real contentment. And central to that plan is the Lord Jesus Christ. He can take away that sinful heart that desires me first all the time, and He can make it clean and pure simply by trusting in His death and His righteousness is attributed to us. The only way for real unity and fellowship, when people coming together without multiplying sin, is in Jesus Christ. He's the only uniting one, true unity. So I urge you, come to the Lord Jesus Christ for the cleansing of your sin and the forgiveness, and don't make your plan for your life without God. Jesus told of a rich farmer that did that, you know. He made his plan. He was so profitable. He says, I'm going to pull down those wee tiny barns and build greater ones. And I'm going to say to my soul, soul, you have much goods laid up for many years. Eat, drink, and be merry. Total self-sufficiency, all planned out. And God says of this man, thou fool, for tonight your soul is required of you. So is everyone that makes plans like that, says the Lord Jesus, and is not rich toward God. Much goods laid up for many years. He had much goods laid up, but he did not have many years, simply because he left God completely out of his life plan. Okay, we'll continue next time. Lord bless you, and thank you for listening.